the real world. So, sattvic, pure beings lived at the top of the tree, and or maybe you could say the bottom of the tree. It's upside down. But towards the top, at least from our viewpoint. And the earthly beings, those engaged in fruitive activities, lived in the middle. And the creatures who were engaged or influenced by tamagun and are in lower bodies, like animals and so forth, they lived in the lower parts of the tree. Krishna, in describing the tree in the first verse, Urdhva Mulam Adashakam, he said some things about the tree, but he didn't tell about the fruits of the tree. So now, in chapter 6, he's going to describe the fruits of the tree, good and bad. The good fruits are conducive for liberation, and the bad fruits bind one to this material world. So Krishna is going to describe the topmost and the bottommost part of the tree in chapter 16, because it is the divine and demoniac natures. There's 26 qualities of the divine mentioned, Daivi Sampat. Just as in the Vaishnav qualities, there are also 26. So here also 26 Daivi Sampat are mentioned. Yeah, in these first three verses. This chapter is divided into three sections. The first section is from 1 to 9, and that is called Transcendental and Demoniac Qualities. Or divine and demoniac qualities. Yeah, that's what they... Maybe just to give it a different name than the chapter time. Huh? That's the it's mentioned the first section. From 1 to 9. Okay, let us chant. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Abhayam Satvasam Shudhir Jnana Yoga Vyavastitihi Dhanam Damascha Yagascha Svadhyayastava Arjavam Ahimsa Satyamakrodhas Tyaga Shantira Paishunam Dhaya Bhuteshva Loluptvam Mardavam Hriyachapalam Tejakshama Dhritik Shautram Adroho Nati Manita Bhavanti Sampadam Daivim Abrijatasya Bharita. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, simplicity, non-violence, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, aversion to fault-finding, compassion for all living entities, freedom from covetousness, gentleness, modesty, steady determination, vigor, forgiveness, fortitude, cleanliness, and freedom from envy, and from the passion for honor. These transcendental qualities, O Son of Bharat, belong to godly man endowed with divine nature. So we have 26 qualities here. And Prabhupada writes in his commentary, in the beginning of the 15th chapter, the banyan tree, this material world was explained. The extra roots coming out of it were compared to the activities of the living entities, some auspicious, some inauspicious. In the 9th chapter, also the devas are godly and asuras, ungodly demons, were explained. Now, according to Vedic rites, activities in the modes of goodness are considered auspicious for progress on the path of liberation, and such activities are known as daivi prakriti, transcendental by nature. Those who are situated in the transcendental nature make progress on the path of liberation. For those who are acting in the modes of passion and ignorance, On the other hand, there is no possibility of liberation. Either they will have to remain in this material world as human beings, or they will descend among the species of animals or even lower life forms. In the 16th chapter, the Lord explains both the transcendental nature and its attendant qualities, and the demoniac nature and its qualities. He will also explain the advantages and disadvantages of these qualities. So, these qualities are the piety, you know, or purity of the human beings. Human beings, they can develop these qualities. There can be some adjustments made, but they're abhijatasya, means that they're born with these qualities from the wombs of their mothers. They're born with these divine qualities because it means that their parents have performed garbhadhan samskar, and they were also born at an auspicious time, not like, you know, at 12 midnight or something like this. Because the time of the day also does influence the birth. So at an auspicious time is also important. Ultimately, by the practice of Bhagavad Bhakti, one can transcend all these things. But it does make it more difficult for one if one is born with demoniac qualities. So, I think that even in India, very few parents perform garbhadhan samskar these days, especially in Bombay, Pune, Delhi, places like that. Maybe in some small towns, very Brahmin families like this, from South India, maybe in little places in the villages, you know. So, these qualities indicate a sattvic nature, a brahminical nature. Sometimes criminologists or sociologists they ascribe the character of an individual according to their environment. They say because a boy was brought up in the ghetto of New York or some hellish place where there's a lot of crime and drugs and so forth, prostitution, that therefore the boy had developed, you know, demoniac characteristics and became a thief or some kind of criminal. But actually these characteristics are already there from birth, and they develop and manifest as the child is growing up. So they're already there from the womb. Now, these qualities have been delineated according to Varna and Ashram, according to Prabhupada's commentary. So the first one, Abhayam, means fearlessness, and Sattva Samshuddhi, and Jnana Yoga Vivastiti. So the first two padas, or the first half of the verse, is for the sannyasis. These three qualities. And abhayam means the person is free from thinking in such a way. How will I live in the forest without my wife and family members? He's free from this type of fear, and this is called abhayam. He realizes that the Lord is in his heart and the Lord will maintain him and protect him. And Prabhupada said this is very important for sannyasis. And if one doesn't have this, then he shouldn't take sannyas. Sattva samshuddhi means just purification of one's existence. It's also, I mean, it's a general kind of quality, but here it's mentioned for sannyasis. It means happiness in the heart, in the citta. Jitu Satvagun. And Jnana Yoga Vivastiti. Right? So the sannyasi is engaged in Jnana Yoga. He's situated in that. Then the next pada, three qualities for the grihastas: Dhanam, Dhammas, and Yajna. So, Dhanam is, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti, says offering one's own foodstuffs to others. Prabhupada mentions about spending 50% of one's income for preaching purposes. That's another way to see charity. And Prabhupada says one, the grihastha should give to institutional societies that are engaged in preaching or some kind of God consciousness. He said charity should be given only to propagate Krishna consciousness all over the world. Of course, later Tamal Krishnamaraj asked Prabhupada about this. It's in his diary. And Prabhupada said up to 50%. Like that. So it wasn't that Prabhupada was like demanding everyone give 50%. But he said up to 50%. Then Svadhyaya is for the brahmachari. Study of the Vedas. Tapa is for the vanaprastha. Forming austerities. And arjavam, simplicity is for everyone. And then there's some more general qualities. Ahimsa, nonviolence, satyam, truthfulness. Akrodha, without anger. Tyaga. Tyaga, Vishnu Chakravarti says, means to give up possessiveness towards one's wife and family. So according to him, it would be for grihastas. Shanti is peacefulness, apayashunam. What does that one mean again? Apayashunam?
Not
any. Oh, not finding fault? Or, huh? Not finding fault. Daya, merciful. To living entities, bhuteshu. Alolubdvam means freedom from greed. Mardavam, gentleness. Vri. What is it?
Modesty.
Achapala means determined, fixed. Then Teja, that's for the Kshatriya. Tejas, power. Kshama means forgiveness or forbearance. Dhriti means determination. Shaucham, cleanliness. Who's that for? Huh? No? Vaisha. Yeah, for the Vaisha. Because he's engaged in the black market and, you know, he's doing different things. So the Vaisha is meant for cleansing especially. Of course, everyone's meant to be clean, but particularly the Vaisha. Adroha is a
freedom from envy.
Adroho. Yeah, freedom from envy. And Nati Manita means humility. And that is for especially the Shudra. Because the Shudra has to serve the other three classes. So if he's proud, he won't be able to perform his dharma. Bhavanti sampadam daivyam abhijatasya. So these are from the womb. Abhija. Right? Abhijata. People are born with certain characteristics or without them. Please choose maybe one, two, or three of these qualities that you most admire in others and illustrate with some examples. Dhriti means determination. So you can choose one or two or even three qualities that you admire most in other devotees and give some example. Do you see any of these qualities in any of the devotees here? Or no? Everyone's a demon? You must have some of these qualities. Shyamarupa, do you see any of these qualities in any of the devotees here? Well, you don't know me very well, that's for sure. Sometimes I get angry, right? Yeah, Leo knows. But I appreciate your offering that. I'll try to become like that. What other characteristics do you see in the Vaishnavas? You have any generous devotees? Yeah, maybe amongst the grihasthas? Yeah. Who's gentle? Who? Murari. Where's Murari? Oh, he's sitting in the back. That's Mardavam. Yeah? Mardava Murari. Any other? Gorsunda. They're laughing because it's true. Some incident? Most difficult department. And he's also a Krodha. He didn't get angry when he needed more chapatis. So. So you should just make sure you come on time. Okay. Anyone else? Arjavam. Who? Shamananda Gaur. He's my... That's right. That's true, huh? He's... Yeah. Yes. Chayaratna. You can give an example? 125 devotees. Okay, that's a good example. Thank you. Yes.
Swadhyay Gaurlila Prabhu.
he's reading for 8 hours, huh? Yeah, we hear that Gauralila's reading books all day sometimes.
And Shanti is
Ramnitai.
Chaitanya
Charan. Determination. Can you give some example? Merciful. Who's the most merciful? Radhishyam. Yeah. He's always preaching. So, the last bit of the commentary, Prabhupada, you can see that he goes through a lot. In Yajna, Vishwanath Chakravarti said that means worshipping the deity and also devas. But the best yoga is chanting Hare Krishna. So that is mentioned here also by Srila Prabhupada. And he puts the Maha Mantra there for us. Because he's also Daya Sarva Bhutesha. So then the last paragraph. All these 26 qualifications mentioned are transcendental qualities. They should be cultivated according to the different statuses of social and occupational order. So that was, we kind of mentioned that this morning in the class in the question period. The purport is that even though material conditions are miserable, if these qualities are developed by practice by all class of men, then gradually it is possible to rise to the highest platform of transcendental realization. So these are conducive to liberation. Now for the demoniac qualities. Dhambudharpa vimanuscha krodha purusham evacha agyanam cha vijatasya partha sampadam asanim. Pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance, these qualities belong to the demoniac nature, O son of Pritha. So we have six qualities, right? It's asuri sampat. Vishwanath Chakravarti says that asuri sampat also indicates rakshasi sampat. And one who takes birth at rajasic or tamasic times receives such qualities accordingly. Again, the word avijatasya is here. So I used to wonder, when I used to read this verse for so many years, what is the difference between pride, arrogance, and conceit? Because in English, they're all pretty much the same. But then I realized, by looking at these commentaries, that Prabhupada actually describes the differences in the commentary. So what he does is, each sentence is describing one word. And in this way, he describes all six in six or seven or eight sentences. The first sentence is just an introduction. In this verse, the royal road to hell is described. Now, the first word, dumpo, which sounds a little bit like the English word dumb, or foolish, means ostentation. Or someone who's a big show-off, who's making a show. And so Prabhupada describes, the demoniac want to make a show of religion and advancement in spiritual science, although they do not follow the principles. So that's the first sentence describing dumpa. Then darpa means being proud because of education or wealth or high family lineage. So then in the next sentence, he describes that one. They are always arrogant or proud in possessing some type of education or so much wealth. And then avimana means someone who wants to be worshipped or respected by others. And then he says, they desire to be worshipped by others and demand respectability, although they do not command respect. And then krodha, you know, means anger. And parusham means harsh speech or hard-heartedness. So then Prabhupada describes those two in the next sentence. Over trifles, they become very angry and speak harshly, not gently. And then the last word is agyanam, means the lack of discrimination. So he describes it in the next sentence. They do not know what should be done and what should not be done. They do everything whimsically according to their own desire, and they do not recognize any authority. And then he describes abhijatasya. These demoniac qualities are taken on by them from the beginning of their bodies in the wombs of their mothers, and as they grow, they manifest these inauspicious qualities. So you can see how scientific Prabhupada's purports are. And actually, a lot of times he does this. The thing is that we don't really notice it. And maybe from presenting the other acharyas' tikas, and then you can see how Prabhupada takes those tikas and just transforms them, just extracting the simple points and writing them, not as Krishna, not as a conversation, but just describing the basic points, which he extracts from the different commentaries. So he has done this also here. So actually, when you study more deeply and see these other commentaries, as I've been sharing with you, then your appreciation for Prabhupada's work only increases. Because you can see how he took the essence of it and he presented it in a very simple, digestible way for all people without all of the Sanskrit terminology and all of these other things. So the words cha, again, have some significance. The first cha indicates greed, lust, or frivolousness. And the second cha indicates less severe demoniac qualities like impatience. The second cha means impatience and other such trifle demoniac qualities. Yeah. And parusham also means hard-heartedness, as well as harsh speech. So these qualities are actually carried over from one's last life, and that's why one has them in the womb, and they just gradually manifest as the person grows up. But that's not true. It's due to the soul, not the genes. Psychophysical nature refers to the modes of nature, and therefore the occupational inclination. The genes are just, you know, the mechanism, but they're not the cause of the qualities. The cause is consciousness. The consciousness of the parents attract a certain soul, and then naturally the body of that soul. So the soul becomes attracted, takes birth in the womb, first through the semen, then through the womb. And then the body, which is created, of course, that has some genes of the parents, and then they get a kind of body which is similar to the body of the parents. But that's very general, because sometimes we see that there's a Brahmin born in a Shudra or a Vaishya family, or there is a Shudra or a Vaishya born in a Brahmin family. So it doesn't always guarantee the psychophysical nature. And then you have things, you know, like Prahlad Maharaj was born of Haranyakashipu. So if it was only this mechanism of the genes, then it would be, you know, guaranteed, you know, the same character as the parents. But we don't see that in reality. So the qualities are developed by that jiva, and he carries them, because as we said, he carries his mind and his subtle body and even his senses, subtle in subtle form, and his pranas, everything. It's just that he doesn't have the hardware, but he takes all the software with him into the next body. That's why he's going to... Huh? No, the qualities don't. That just has to do with the gross body. The gross body could be pious or impious. The only thing that the genes have to do with that, because it corresponds with the, like the varna, the body of the person. And, you know, whether the person, I mean, probably there's something to do with the, you know, the doshas also, which gives some idea if the person's like attached, or he's worried, a worried kind of person, or he's a kind of chubby, jolly person. This may be in the genes. But this is just the body, really. He may be chubby and jolly and then stab you in the back with a knife. Or he may be chubby and jolly and he may be a devotee dancing in the kirtan. Or like that. So chubby and jolly doesn't really indicate whether he's, you know, an asura or a deva. It's just that his nature. Right? Yeah. Well, it means we'll see that the main thing is he doesn't accept authority. That's what I think is indicated. You'll see. Let's read more. Let's see. Let's continue. Let's not get paralysis through analysis. Okay, next verse. Daivi sampat vimokshaya nibhanda suni. Mata Mashucha Sampada Daivim Abhijato Sipandama. The transcendental qualities are conducive to liberation. Mokshaya. Vimokshaya. Whereas the demonic qualities make for Nibandha. Bondage. Do not worry, Ma Sucha, O son of Pandu, for you are born with the divine qualities. So Arjuna got a little bit worried when he heard the demoniac qualities, just as maybe some of you have. And he said, but what are my qualifications, Krishna? Do I possess these demoniac qualities? In the past, I've been angry and I've spoken harshly to my superiors, and I'm about to kill them with my arrows on the battlefield. And so the Lord said, O Pandava by birth, he calls him Pandava here, O noble Kshatriya by birth, this activity of fighting is ordained by Dharma Shastra, and thus it is not demoniac for you. Violence and anger are condemned only outside of the battle for Kshatriya. You are a noble Kshatriya and your arrows are religious, so do not lament. I think that's very interesting. So Krishna says, Ma Shucha, don't worry, Arjuna. Arjuna was concerned. So Krishna has to kind of cool him down a little bit, pacify him. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also said, as Krishna, his commentary says, O Arjuna, by cultivating Jnana Yoga while following Varnashram Dharma, one achieves Sattva Samshuddhi. You are blessed with Daivi Sampat, being born in a noble Kshatriya caste. It is not asuric to kill one's relatives in a dharmic battle by shooting them with arrows and other aggressive acts in accordance with Shastra. Therefore, do not worry. So then you see Prabhupada does the same thing in his Tika. Prabhupada writes, Krishna encouraged Arjuna by telling him that he was not born with demoniac qualities. His involvement in the fight was not demoniac because he was considering the pros and cons. He was considering whether respectable persons such as Bhishma and Drona should be killed or not. So he was not acting under the influence of anger, false prestige, or harshness. Therefore, he was not of the quality of the demons. For Kshatriya, shooting arrows at the enemy is considered transcendental, and refraining from such a duty is demoniac. Therefore, there was no cause for Arjuna to lament. Anyone who performs the regulative principles of the different orders of life is transcendentally situated. So he extracts the same idea without all of the drama and, you know, the so forth. So, see, Prabhupada was kind of writing for people who didn't have, you know, faith that Krishna's God and then there's Arjuna. So he was writing in a kind of in a sober and you know, philosophical way. So he presents his points like this, logically and very soberly. Okay. Let us finish the section, then we can have some questions. Text 6. Dvabhuta sargalokesmin nirvayasura evacha daivo vistarasha prokta asuram partameshrinu. O son of Pritha, in this world there are two kinds of created beings. One is called the divine and the other demoniac. I have already explained to you at length the divine qualities. Now hear from me of the demoniac. So, the word lokesmin means in this world. So, the acharyas have explained that it indicates that humans in this world can change their nature, but animals cannot. So, humans can, by practice, develop divine qualities. As we know, yata kanchanatam yati kamsa rasa vidhanataha tatha diksha vidhanena vijitam jayate nirnam. So human beings can develop brahminical qualities by vidha, by practice and by following the rules and regulations of shastra and by getting initiation and the usual practice of the Vaishnavas. He said that I have already explained to you prokta, right, vistarasha, in at great length. So he is describing the first three verses of this chapter in this place. But other devotees might think that, because Krishna has actually given quite a list of divine qualities from chapter 2 and chapter 5, chapter 6, chapter 12 at the end, and 13 in the middle, 14 also at the end. So throughout the Gita he's been describing transcendental or divine qualities. And so now he says, let's concentrate on talking about the demoniac qualities. Now Prabhupada mentions in the purport four times that the main characteristic between these two kinds of created beings, right? Dvau ima, dvau bhuta sargo, lokesmin, is that the first one, right, the Daiva, Deva, he follows the authority of the Shastra, and the Asura does not. And he says it four times in this one paragraph. You can see that from the third sentence, those who are born with divine qualities follow a regulated life. That is to say, they abide by the injunctions in scriptures and by the authorities. One should perform duties in the light of authoritative scripture. That's twice. Then later, there is no other criterion but obedience to the regular principles of scriptures. And then at the end, the only difference is that one class obeys the Vedic injunctions and the other does not. So, just to make it very clear to the reader, because that will be brought up again at the end of the chapter. That's the main point of the chapter, actually. In the Padma Purana, there's a verse which is almost exactly the same as this verse. It says, Dva bhuta sarga lokesmin daiva asura evacha. Vishnu bhakta smrito daiva asuras tad viparyaya. So, that means that the devotees are considered to be the devata, or the deva. And they worship the Lord, they're not envious, and they follow the shastra. But asuras tadviparya means that the asuras actually are envious of the Lord and the devotees. And they're whimsical in their behavior, they don't follow the shastra. Next verse, 7. Pravittim cha nevrittim cha jana na vidur asura na shaucham na pichacharo na satyam teshu vinyate. Those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness nor proper behavior nor truth is found in them. So there's no need to link these verses because they're linked just by the verses themselves. He says, I'm going to tell you the demoniac qualities. Now, here they are, right? So, pravrittim, right? They don't know what to do. And nivrittim, they don't know what not to do. So why they do not know what to do? Because they have no faith in the Vedas, which describe what to do and what not to do. And since they reject the Vedas, because they don't accept the authority of the person who spoke the Veda, which is the Supreme Lord, Narayan himself. Therefore, they don't know what to do and not to do. They have no standard, you know, matrix of knowledge, no outline about how to live in the world. We give the example many times of when you buy a car or, you know, a CD player or something, then you get an instruction manual, right? And Krishna has given the Vedas as the instruction manual for the earthlings to read. But if you don't read that, that means you don't know how to use the thing properly. And you may break it or you may abuse it. Right? So that's how it is. The demons, they come here. They don't use the manual. They say there's no, creator of this item. It just appeared. And let me just do whatever I want with it. And in this way, they destroy everything, like a foolish child who doesn't read the manual. He just starts playing with this, you know, complicated electronic machine, and then he just breaks it. It's just like that. And it's really a very appropriate example. So, jano na vidur asura. These people, they don't know these things. And na shaucham, they're not clean. Right, they take bath once a week, maybe, right? Like in the West. Nachacharo, they don't have proper behavior. Their achar is not there. And there's no prachar. Or if they preach, it's also demoniac kind of preaching. They don't have nice etiquettes or dealings with others. Nasatyam. The very last leg of religion left in Kali Yuga, they don't even have that. They're not truthful. They're not truthful to themselves. They're not truthful to others. Why are they not truthful? Because they're just concerned with the body and the senses of the body and sense gratification. And therefore they don't give a damn about truth. Their truth is just to satisfy the senses. That's their priority. And anyone that gets in their way, they just stop them. Then they'll say anything to get the sense gratification. So there's no principle. They have no principle. That is their principle, just to enjoy the senses. Up until the last breath, which we'll read later. So the Asura Sampad is 12 verses, starting from here. So we can see now he's going to describe them. Prabhupada writes, those who do not follow the scriptural injunctions are supposed to be demons. Therefore, it is stated here that demons do not know the scriptural rules, nor do they have any inclination to follow them. Most of them do not know them. And even if some of them know, they have not the tendency to follow them. They have no faith, nor are they willing to act in terms of the Vedic injunctions. They are rascals. Prabhupada talks about how Manusamhita describes very basic things like women not being given freedom and children like this. Not that they're slaves, but anyway, it says, the demons have now neglected such injunctions, and now they think that women should be given as much freedom as men. However, this has not improved the social condition of the world. He gives this as an example of demoniac culture, the demoniac philosophy, so to speak. The modern education has artificially devised a puffed-up concept of womanly life. And therefore, marriage is practically now an imagination in human society. And this was written, 40, 50 years ago? Right? So now it's much worse. Prabhupada wrote this in the 50s, maybe, something like this. Like 50 years ago. Now, nor is the moral condition of woman very good now. The demons, therefore, do not accept any instruction which is good for society. And because they do not follow the experience of great sages and the rules and regulations laid down by those sages, the social condition of the demoniac people is very miserable. So they may preach, but because they're so selfish, you know, they have like a certain idea, but it's not right. And there's an example of the teachings are coming here in text 8. So there, what are their teachings, my Lord? Well, asatyam apratishtam te. Yeah, we can say this. Let us chant. Asatyam apratishtam te jagat ahuranishwaram aparaspara sambhutam kim anyat kam mahaitukam. They say this world is unreal with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. So, this is their philosophy. Everybody has some philosophy. But it's all based upon sense gratification, again. And the whimsical movements of the materially affected intelligence and mind. So the example is given of the vulture and the jackal. One day, a young boy died outside of the village. And so the relatives came there, and they were crying and lamenting and expressing their feelings, how he was such a wonderful boy, how they miss him, and so on and so forth. So the jackal was there, and he was saying, yes, he was kind of giving like karma philosophy. Yes, it's very good what you're doing. The boy had very great qualities. He was very truthful, honest, and it's good that you're expressing yourselves in such a way. So you should continue to immerse yourself in the sweet remembrances of this boy, chant his glories until sunset. And then tomorrow you can cremate the body. Now, while he was speaking sweetly to the relatives of the boy, a vulture flew past and he looked down. And he said, oh, look at that. That looks good. And he came down and he started to try to refute the philosophy of the jackal. He said, and he presented like he was presented Atma Tattva. He was like a gyani. And he said, don't you know that the soul, the Atma of this boy, that is the real person that you love. Now he's gone. What is the use of lamenting and glorifying the qualities of the person who has already left? This is simply sentimentalism and foolish. So you should just leave this place, develop detachment, try to understand that the soul is eternal. He's not actually dead. And you should just go home now, so that I could eat the body, not the jackal. Right? So the both of them presented philosophy because the jackal is a creature of the night, so he eats in the night. So he said, and you just keep glorifying him until sunset, because after sunset you cannot cremate the body, you have to wait till the morning. And then he could eat the body at night. But the vulture could get rid of them now, send them away, and just have his feast then. So both of them presenting philosophy, but it's just based upon what they want. So people, they present philosophy. The demons are like this. They have a philosophy, but it's just based upon their sense enjoyment. That is the whole criterion of their ideas. So Prabhupada says, they do not think that the world was created by God for a certain purpose. They have their own theory that the world has come about in its own way and that there is no reason to believe that there is a God behind it. Right? Anishwaram. They take it for granted, skipping down a bit, they take it for granted that all manifestations of diversity is a display of ignorance. Just as in a dream, we may create so many things which actually have no existence. So when we are awake, we shall see that everything is simply a dream. But factually, Although the demons say that life is a dream, they are very expert in enjoying this dream. Right? So they say asatyam, this is false. Like the Mayavadis, right? They're also demons. Mayavadi, Aparadi. So they're offensive demons. And they have this asatyam, jagan-mitya philosophy. Brahma-satya, jagan-mitya. So this asatya means the same thing as mitya. So the Mayavadis, according to Baladev Vidyabhushan, he has tagged these two different groups. He says asatyam, apratishtam, and anishvaram are presented by the Mayavadis. They say that this world is illusion, like a rope which is being mistaken for a snake, and that is a pratishtam, that there's no foundation, just like a flower in the sky, and there's no creator or any god, so it's anishram, no controller. And a paraspara sambhutam is presented by the Buddhists, who he calls swabhavavadis. They say everything is natural. And this world has not come from the joining of male and female. That is aparaspara. And the philosophers of Charvak Muni. They said that this world is created by kama haitukam. Right? It is created by the flow of lust between the male and female. And the Jains, they say kama. That is, that God, being selfish, created the world. The selfish desire of God. This is what Baladeva Vidyabhushan is presenting this way. The demons say kama haitukam means the selfish desire of the creator, if there is one. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained this a little bit too. So he says, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, asuric persons call this world asatya, apratishta, and anishvara. Their philosophy is that there's no reason to accept the existence of Ishvara, because cause and effect is not the basis of the creation. Some say that Ishvara doesn't exist. But if he does, when he created the world, he was influenced by selfish desires, and so he doesn't deserve to be worshipped by us anyway. So Prabhupada adds, they do not believe in the words of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, Mayadhyakshena Prakriti Suryate Sacharachara. That's also mentioned by Baladev in his commentary. In other words, among the demons, there is no perfect knowledge of the creation of the world. Every one of them has some particular theory of his own. So it seems that he was summarizing Baladev's teaching in that sentence. Okay, text 9, the last verse of this section. Then we'll have questions. Etang drishtim avashtabhya nashtatmano pakapudaya prabhavantyugrakarmana kshayaya jagato hitaha. Following such conclusions, the demoniac who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. So you have three things being mentioned here. Nashta Atmana, Alpa Buddhaya, and Ugra Karma. Karmana. Ugra Karma destroys the world and is unbeneficial. So these people are lost to themselves, nashta atmana, because they don't even realize that they're a spirit soul. They just think that I'm this body. They don't know who they are. And they have very little intelligence, Alpa Buddhaya. As we can see by the ridiculous philosophies that they espouse. And they perform ugra karma. And Prabhupada describes this in the commentary. It's rather frightening. He talks about animal killing, and he says indirectly this verse anticipates the invention of nuclear weapons, of which the whole world is today very proud. At any moment, war may take place, and these atomic weapons may create havoc. Such things are created solely for the destruction of the world, and this is indicated here. Due to godlessness, such weapons are invented in human society. They are not meant for the peace and prosperity of the world. Definitely not. They claim they are meant for peace. But Prabhupada says they have these, all spending billions of dollars on these things, and you're not going to use them. You know, just like a person, a family, they spend millions of dollars on something and then they never use it? No, doesn't work like that. I mean, sooner or later they will be used. Actually, the arms race or the production of weapons is the biggest business on the Earth planet. Billions of dollars are spent every year. Billions. Just like Russia produces the best fighter planes in the world, and over 40 countries in the world have purchased the newest fighter jets from Russia. And recently they've gotten, I think, from India and from the Middle East also, and Malaysia and Indonesia, countries like that, big billion, like $3 billion, $4 billion contracts for jets. They have these jets that can fly and kind of go like this. I've seen it, because we have one devotee who was in the Russian Air Force, and he was here the other day, actually, named Shanti Parayana. I don't know if you met him. But he was sent to all of these different countries to teach the people how to fly these planes. They go like this. You know, they can go like this. It's amazing. I saw these jets in a documentary. He showed me when I went to his house. I couldn't believe it. I'd never seen any planes like this. So they far surpass any other kind of fighter jet. Billions of dollars. You know, it's the biggest business actually in the world. So, you know, there's a lot of people that are making big money on these wars. And that's why they're going on. Because that's their philosophy. That just give them money and sense gratification, and then they justify everything somehow along the way. And in the late 80s, it was documented that there's enough destructive weaponry in this world to kill every man, woman, and child 1,000 times over. And still the stockpiles are increasing. In other words, for each person on the earth, there is like, you know, 2,000 tons of TNT worth of weapons. Now, you only need a few kilos of TNT to kill you, or even a few ounces. And now they have like thousands of tons per person. And still, the stockpiles are going more and more and more. It's simply for making money, and it's like they're trying to figure out the quickest way to kill everyone with the least effort. And they consider this to be advancement in science. So, yeah, it's a dangerous situation. Because again, before it was just America and Russia that had armed weapons, these atomic weapons. But now there's maybe 50 countries all around the world, something like that. And they all have these Russian jets, and they have these big missiles, and these big nuclear warheads. Very, very frightening situation. So, kshayaya jagato hita. is unbeneficial urgun karma meant for the destruction of the world.
What is this TNT?
TNT is explosives which they used before the atomic weapons were invented. Like some stick, and you light it and explode. This is how they blow up the mountains when they're
dynamite.
It's called TNT dynamite. When they're blowing up the mountains to make the roads, they use this. They put a stick in there, they light it, and then it blows off the whole side. I can't even say it. TNT, dynamite, yes. So it's, so that is just ancient stuff, you know. That's from like 40 years ago, TNT, dynamite. But now they have these other things, this atomic weaponry. Balarama Vidyabhushan has commented on this, text 9. He says, the demoniac create philosophies to propound their personal opinions. By adhering to their philosophies, they destroy the whole world. Resorting to these philosophies, these persons of meager intelligence who possess petty opinions are lost to themselves in the sense that they cannot perceive the actual distinction between the self, the body, and other things. They are engaged in horrible work and devote themselves to malicious and cruel activities. By causing the world to deviate from the principles of spiritual life, they are the enemies of the world, and thus they exert their influence for the world's destruction. And nowadays you have a lot of terrorists running around, you know, blowing up things with TNT, dynamite, whatever. Different things in all the countries, all around the world. In Moscow, or in those South Russia, the Chechens are up to their old tricks, because you know the Russian government is suppressing them because there's some oil in that country. It's a very poor country, but they have some oil. So the Russians don't want to let it go because they get the oil. But the people want freedom from the Russian government. And so there's this, you know, kind of guerrilla warfare going on. And they send people to Moscow and they blow up some train or they blow up some, you know, in the underground, something like this. And they do this, they've done this also recently, like it was about 50 people were killed, 150 people were injured. And there was a group of terrorists, three women and a man. They got on the train, they had all these explosives. And the man had hand grenades strapped to his body, all around his body. Three of the ladies jumped off the train, and when it went into Russia, then from Chechnya, then must have been at least one full car that just completely exploded. And then the other cars fell off the track, and, you know, so a couple hundred people were injured, and this just happened yesterday, I think.
Live bomb.
Yeah. So the three ladies jumped off the train, but the man stayed on, and he exploded with all these things on his body, like a Chechen kamikaze fighter, suicide. Yeah. You know. Well, there was the one man. So that means they're mad, mad. And of course, you know what they did in New York a couple of years ago. These were different. These were the other terrorists. When that happened, I was in Moscow and living in the living room of my friend, who's a Russian devotee. And he came running into my room. He said, "Prabhu, come in, we'll see the TV. What's on the TV?" I said, "What? You want me to watch the TV?" He goes, "It's a news report. There's some buildings that exploded in New York." You know, and I said, "What?" And I came in, and I was looking, and I couldn't even believe it. You know, the two big twin towers. It's like, you know, I grew up in Manhattan, and it's like, you know, they're like the, I don't know, how can you say it?
Monument.
They have the big monuments, right, in Manhattan, the biggest buildings in the world. And you know, the plane just crashed right into the, and it was smoking, and I just couldn't believe it. And while I was watching it, and the smoke was coming on the building, then another plane came and just crashed into the second one. And I said, is this real? You know, is this is like a movie or something? That, and he goes, no, it's a news report. And then people goes, and the guy was going, and then there's another airplane, and it's coming, it's smashing into the second building over there. And I was like, wow. Just unbelievable, you know. And there's people, you know.
Taking the video, yeah.
Yeah, it's just incredible. Incredible. I couldn't believe it. And then after, and then the people were hanging out of the window going, help, help. I thought for sure they're going to have some helicopter come and or something, you know, and save the people, send some big ladders up or, you know, throw a rope from the, you know what I mean? There's so many ways they could have saved the people. So they were just going, you know, taking some rag. They were going like this, help, help, you know. But then after a while, the building was just burning, and then it got so hot, the people just jumped out of the, it was so hot, they just couldn't stand it, so they just jumped out from the building. And then they just splattered on the ground, like pumpkins or like coconuts, because they were up like, you know, like 60, 70, 80, 90 stories. It's, you know, they just came up, just a puddle of blood on the ground. There's dozens of people just jumping out of the building in New York. And then, you know, the people in the streets, they were just completely shocked, horrified. They just ran. And then finally, the end of it was then the whole building just came crashing down. Both of the buildings just, the inside of it, the steel structures just melted and buckled. And then the building just buckled in on itself, and the whole thing just went and just covered like maybe 15 city blocks just with rubble and concrete, and people were covered, and I mean people were running and just running. It was a horrible thing. So this is the kind of thing that, you know, these demoniac people, they have no sense of what's right and wrong. They don't know what to do, what not to do. That this is the answer, you know, to the world's problems. We should just kill these innocent people. So it's obvious that this is, we're living with such kind of people in this day and age, and nowadays becoming worse and worse. So the only hope is to preach strongly, become pure, and to help others to become Krishna conscious. All right, thank you. So now we'll stop. Are there any questions about this chapter? Yes. Well, the people who are demoniac, they gradually, they have all these bad qualities. They're proud, and they don't accept authority. And they're absorbed in their senses and the sense gratification. So when it comes to the scripture, they're not interested in scripture. And then because scripture means authority, and for them, they themselves are the authority. They opposing God's authority with their own. So they just reject Shastra due to their nature, their demoniac nature. If you follow Shastra, well, he won't follow Shastra. I mean, if he decides to change, you know, and then he becomes a devotee or some kind of religious person, then he's no longer a demon. That can happen. So then his qualities will change, and then he accepts Shastra. Then he has to work very hard to develop, Daivi Sampat. And probably, the quickest, easiest way is to do bhakti. Because if he just does some yoga, probably won't be powerful enough. In any case, it's a struggle. We can see, you know, we have some demoniac qualities and we're struggling with them, even though we might have surrendered to Krishna or at least accepted the idea that Krishna is indeed God. And right, we're trying to become devotees and we're still struggling with our past vasanas and samskaras and so forth, which are not always so sattvic. They're you know, exceptional demons. Those are like ancient Vedic time demons and special, you know, they're exceptional. Generally, the people, they don't follow any scripture. But sometimes they may accept it and then misuse it for their own ends. Well, they also tried to capture Krishna and throw him in jail. They tried to kill the Pandavas. It was externally they were trying to show good qualities, but the evil qualities came out because Duryodhana was a partial manifestation of Kali. So he was like sin personified. So yeah, he tried to show some namba, ostentatious. He was ostentatious, you know, trying to make a show of being religious, but actually it wasn't religion. How can it be religious? He tried to kill some, especially the Pandavas. Someone knows who?
Rules and regulations, but does not follow it.
Mm-hmm. And what? Okay, yeah, most of them do not know. And even if some of them know, they don't want to follow them. Well, yeah, you can say there's two kinds. There's innocent demons and demons. So some are consciously and some are unconsciously. So if they're innocent, then there's maybe some hope that they can be saved. But the fact is that they're still acting as demons and they're thinking like demons. Well, as I said before, there are some empirical ways to validate the scripture and the supreme for people who are not religious. I mean, you can point to the fact that the scriptures are very ancient, they're written in Sanskrit, it's a very vast language, it takes 10 years just to learn the grammar. They use it in the NASA space programs and the computers for the high philosophical, mathematical formulas. There's descriptions in the Puranas, like in the Bhagavad Purana, of embryology and about vimanas and about the time sequence called the Truti, you know, the time for the sun pass over one atom. You know, there's cosmology. The practices, we can, you know, also begin ourselves and see the development. It's practical. The results can be seen, you know, in a short time, in a few months. And, you know, in this way, I can't remember everything, but there's a lot of such empirical ways to validate the scriptures in the eyes of the faithless persons. Like Wernher von Braun, he used the Vedas to get his theories for his rockets in the NASA space program. The nuclear propulsion theory, he says, was based on Vedic knowledge. You know, Einstein, he used to read the Vedas, he glorified the Bhagavad Gita. You know, there's many persons like this who gave validation to the Vedas. You know, what's that? Oh, maybe Raghavendra's got some sweets in his pocket. Haribol. So, does what? Not that I know. I just kind of collected things in my brain over the last 28 years. There's more, actually. Like the original person in Europe that studied the Vedas, his name was Paolo Bartolomeo. So he was an Austrian missionary, and he studied the Vedas, and he learned Sanskrit, and he translated. And he was very much impressed with the Vedas. He glorified it up and down. And so a lot of the original Indologists had done that. But later, there was like a move to discredit the Vedas by the Christian world. So then people started translating and then they discredited. They said this is very archaic, barbaric. You know, they're like, worshiping, I forget the words that they use. They just said that it's a barbaric mythology, like this. People with 10 heads and 4 arms and this and that, talking birds and monkeys and, you know. They saw all that aspect and just dismissed everything completely. Wait, he has a question first. There's also who? What, the planetary influences? Oh, when you take birth? Yeah, that has influence, of course. Yeah. It has some influence now. Like Rahu is not a very good sign. Right. Rahu, he's a demon. Are there any other planets or demons? Jupiter is the best. That's Brihaspati. Shani. He's a demon. Yeah, he's malefic. Mars is not so good. What's the word for Mars? Mungal. Amungal. Mungal is Amungal. Yeah, so... Yeah, it does have... Of course it has some influence on us. Yeah. Shani can be good. It depends on the particular person, you know, and the other planets and everything. But in general, it's considered a malefic. I don't know that much about astrology, but I know a little bit, probably as much as you. Well, as far as I know, that Maya gives them some shakti somehow. I don't know. It doesn't have to do with their piety. But it could be that they perform some pious acts in the last life. That can happen. A person could have been pious, but then now he's born, and then he becomes very selfish. And, you know, we have so many accounts from the Puranas of a person who was born in a Brahmin family, but then he became demoniac, you know. Even Bhomasura, right? He's the Lord's son, right? And he also became demoniac because of bad association. So, and somehow Maya Shakti, Maya Devi gives them some Shakti to perform the activities. Somehow they're worshipping Maya. Demonology. That's... Yeah, God's selfish desire. He made a big mess. He was playing around and sent us here. And why the hell did he do it? And he, you know, if I was God, I would have made it like much different. Right? You've heard people speak like that. That's the idea. And the other idea is like Charvak philosophy. That just the flow of lust between man and woman, that is the source of the creation, kama haitakam. There's different ways to present that. But yeah, Baladev's commentary was, I guess, the most detailed about that. Gave it all this breakdown, all this philosophies, demoniac philosophies from Jains, Buddhists, Mayavadis, Charvak Munis. Charvak Muni Walas are like the basic, you know, kind of materialists. But they don't accept the Supreme. They don't think that there's any God. They think that God is Maya. Ram and Krishna, just Maya, just illusion. Mayavadis are atheists. Yeah, they misinterpret the Vedas. I mean, there's another definition that atheist means someone who doesn't accept the Vedas. But if you have a God with, you know, if you have a religion without God, that's not real religion. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. That God is the one who's giving the religion. If you don't accept God, then how are you religious? You must be a Gnostic. You're a, you know, Pashandi. Okay. Hare Krishna. Oh, yes. What's your name, sir? Brajbilas. Okay. Yes, that's what I said. What's the difference? Well, it's, I would say it's somewhat connected, because it's talking about a kind of internal cleanliness. You know, not to have such underhanded dealings with the black market people doing things against the law, and it's a kind of cleanliness. But I accept your point also. It's a kind of honesty or truthfulness. Yeah, anyway, that's the connotation. That's Prabhupada's connotation to this Shaucham. I can't say anything more about that. Huh? Which one?
Achapala.
Mm-hmm. Right. Here, he says, this determination means not to be agitated or frustrated. That there may be some failure, but you should continue. Dritti generally means that also, determination. But because we know chapala means flickering, but the person doesn't flicker, he continues in a different circumstance. And Dritti gives the ability to be a chapala. Dritti is the kind of, you become determined, and then that mental state creates this pranas, affects the pranas, and you get some energy to perform, to finish the work. But here it seems that more to not be agitated, because achapala means not agitated. Whereas dritti just means when there's this mental determination. You may be determined and later you may become agitated. Okay, let's stop now, because I have to chant my rounds. I chanted about half of them now, so. Hare Krishna. See you, the Prabhupada ki. Yeah.